following presentation by Wealth Quarterback LLC, WQL, is intended for general information purposes only. No portion of the presentation serves as the receipt of or as a substitute for personalized investment advice from WQL or any other investment professional of your choosing. Please see additional important disclosure at the end of this presentation. A copy of WQL's current written disclosure brochure discussing our advisory services and fees is available upon request or at www.jalinski.org.
Hey, everybody. This is Josh Jalinski, the financial quarterback. Today on the show, we are unpacking the heated debate over the future of 401k plans and the bold proposal to exchange their tax advantages for Social Security boosts. A misstep in the making? You bet. Then, in extra points, a peek into the pantry. What's really behind the rise in cereal costs? This is the Financial Quarterback Podcast. What would your retirement plan look like if the government suddenly abolished the 401k? Alicia Munnell and Andrew Biggs, in their most recent article, which says USA Today, what if the government abolished 401ks? From Danielle De Vise. Economists say they aren't worth it. So Andrew G. Biggs, he goes, my new paper with, this is his tweet, with Alicia Munnell, argues for rolling back the federal tax expenditure. Get this, for your 401k, you won't get a deduction anymore. And redirect the savings to Social Security. Full repeal would fix roughly 3/4 of the Social Security long-term funding gap. You know, they're not mutually exclusive. It's like life is a zero-sum game. Do these people go to logic? Alicia Munnell, I've read a lot of her work. I actually like most of her work. I don't like this article. So Andy Biggs, isn't that the guy from American Pie?
That's Jason Biggs.
Okay, he's a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a member of Financial Oversight and Management Board for Puerto Rico. God help Puerto Rico. So the guy basically says we got to fix Social Security. But we fix Social Security by hurting those who've saved. Can somebody please tell me how stealing from the rich and giving to Social Security helps anybody? When in fact, I would argue that because people have done such a good job saving their 401k, they're not exclusively needy. They don't need government welfare. They don't need Medicaid because they've saved a lot in their 401k. But Andrew G. Biggs and Alicia Munnell are arguing that the way to save Social Security is to gut the 401k of its tax deductibility. Tax preferences for saving and retirement plans are expensive. About $185 billion in 2020. So the Treasury comes out and tells us what a program costs, but it does not know what the absence of that benefit would create in a shortfall. So a lot of these people don't go to basic, like they didn't take logic in high school or college. So because it costs the U.S. Treasury $185 billion, which we don't really know it, we just know that that's $185 billion less in the government coffers. Does that make sense? So You get a tax write-off. The government doesn't get that money because you saved it, but you saved it. So you're going to be able to spend that when you're retired. You're going to be able to pay sales tax. You're going to pay income tax on that money. A 401k is not an elimination of income tax. It's merely a deferral. So that if you start with 30 grand a year or 20 grand a year, that is going to grow to $1 million or $2 million. You're going to have more money. So the government's going to get more. So I would argue it's illogical. It's saying sort of saving for retirement is a zero-sum game. There's some winners and some losers. But I would argue the government is going to make more 20 or 30 years down the line because you saved in your 401k. And then you're going to be able to have a forced savings plan. So I think the logic is flawed. And the social media post has drawn quite a stir, 700,000 views. Allowing people to shelter their money from taxes is a policy that largely favors the well-heeled, they said. But are they well-heeled because they saved? Maybe they were lower income. Maybe they were middle income. And why do we want to take the incentive away from the worker to save for their own retirement? Hey, this is Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback. We'll be back after these messages.
Tune in to the financial quarterback, Josh Jelinski, then learn how to protect your financial future in a down economy. Josh and his team at the Jelinski Advisory Group can help you lower your taxes and lower your risk in these uncertain times with a 27-point checklist designed to improve your financial health. Whether you're worried about runaway prices, fear of an upcoming recession, or a stock market meltdown, tune in to the financial quarterback and count on Josh Jelinski to call the play. For a free copy of Josh's book, The Retirement Reality Check, call 888-988-5674. That's 888-988-5674. Or visit Jelinski.org. That's Jalinski.org.
Here's the thing. In the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, pensions were a thing of life. The 90s, they replaced that. And ERISA, which passed in the 70s, paved the way for companies to say, we are no longer funding your pension. It is no longer the company's responsibility to fund your retirement. It is your responsibility. And by the way, that change in public policy came with many victims. My parents were victims of this. They grew up in a time where everybody had a pension. You know, your kids, they came up with the 401k. It was a thing to do, put 10 to 15% of your pay from your 20s. But people in their 60s today, 70s, the 401k was so new in the 90s, it was a little scary. Then the market went down in 2000 to 2002, wiped out my parents' 401k. Then my father got disabled. My father was an early boomer, born 1946, then my mother 1947. So that era, and I would say even early Gen X, it wasn't an enculturated thing to save 10% of your pay in the 401k. It wasn't like you woke up and it was ingrained. When you woke up, it was ingrained. You work for the Bud factory for 30 years and they're going to pay your salary. You get a good job, right? With a good company like IBM. And when you retire, you'll get a pension. Is that true? That was the societal programming. Now, because our parents have been screwed largely, we are ingrained, or maybe you're a boomer listening, you did what you were supposed to, but if you didn't have a job where the 401k was just part of daily life, so people really now say, oh man, I wish I saved a couple hundred dollars a month of my pay in the 90s to today. But it was not a culturally ingrained thing. Now that we have saving in a 401k as a thing ingrained in our cultural psyche, now you want to pull that? That would be the biggest government rug pull in a generation. See, the pensions to 401k shift, that was a rug pull by companies that wanted to de-risk themselves. I don't blame the company. But now you have these people gather in public policies that basically say, well, Social Security is becoming insolvent. So we need to tax people more and cut their benefits. And because people who have more money disproportionately save in the 401k, let's not give them a tax break. You know what? If you're a working stiff, I'm even lumping me into that. You get three tax breaks left. There are very few tax breaks left. Get the mortgage on your home. You get the 401k. And what else? Your kids. That's about it. Like 50 years ago, you could write off a vacation. You could write off an alpaca. You could write off oil derricks. You could write off a lot that you can't write off as much. Now, there are business expenses, but I love when you know, because, oh, well, that's a business write-off. Yeah, it's a business write-off, but you're still spending money. You're not investing that. Here, it is a write-off. It lowers your taxable income, and you build it for the future. So I believe this would be disastrous. And Alicia Munnell is very respected. I've not heard of Andrew Biggs. We do not think that this subsidy, which you can only rationalize if it increases savings, we don't think it does increase saving very much, says Alicia Munnell, an assistant Treasury secretary under President Clinton. She co-wrote the brief with Andrew Biggs. So these are people in the know and with influence. Here's why economists are coming for your 401k. Why then are economists coming after your 401k? That employee retirement plan and its personal savings counterpart were created to help you save for retirement. But federal data suggests tax-favored retirement accounts help only some Americans. Yeah, it helps the people who save. So they don't go on welfare. So they don't go on Medicaid. Of course, it will benefit those who save, but we don't want those who've saved to go back on welfare. For households in the top 10% by income, the median retirement account held $559,000. I got news here. $559,000 is only going to equal about 24 to 30 grand in retirement income. That is not like a massive amount saved. And that's the top 10%. That tells me people aren't saving enough in the 401k. And you see this on TikTok and Instagram, that 401k has become this, ooh, I don't like a 401k anymore. Why? What do you like? I like cash value life insurance. And then somebody's trying to sell you real estate or some other thing. I want to be very clear, my friends. Do not fall for the siren song of those who are telling you a 401k is a mistake. Are there weaknesses in a 401k? Yes. But banning policy that you've been used to for 34 years, bad idea. You could create other government programs and you can find other things. See, this is always what they go after. The Trump tax code, and I don't want to get on whether you like it or didn't like it, but even if you liked it, it raised the marital deduction. But a lot of people now can't deduct as much things as they used to. So this is just another way of going after the average middle class deduction. This is not going after the carried interest loophole. This is not going after the billionaires. You notice they never tax the billionaires. All these people say, oh, let's have a billionaires tax. We've never had that because they influence public policy. Hey, let's go after Johnny's $500,000 401k because Johnny was a regular middle-class stiff who saved $300 every pay period. He grew that to $600,000 to retire. You know what? Screw Johnny. What else, Josh Fisher? What do you think about this?
I don't disagree. It's always going after the middle to upper middle. And that's where this disconnect is coming because, yeah, they're not going after billionaires with this. I mean, this affects, you know, the people who work their hardest and are part of capitalism in a way that, you know, you're promised some sort of success, but not without all these hurdles you have to jump over. It's kind of the worst.
I mean, imagine if I told this story in the early 2000s as a problem to the 401k, but it was more illustrating the fact that the government can change the rules. And my argument for people back then was saving things other than a 401k, meaning diversify. Don't merely save in the 401k. Save into cash value insurance. Save into brokerage accounts. And yes, save into your 401k. It's not a either or, it's a both end. And my idea was that, well, what if the Kiplinger magazine that said, well, government changes the rules on 401ks. What if the dog ate that back then? Because that was when you used to get like the Wall Street Journal in like 2005. You still got the Wall Street Journal, you know, at your house. But what if the dog ate that newspaper? And this is the thing. This is a newspaper that I didn't even see until my producer brought it up to me, because I do not follow Andy Biggs. And I don't follow Alicia Munnell. We got Alicia Silverstone and who?
Jason Biggs.
Jason Biggs, Andy Biggs, and Alicia Munnell. I get what they're saying. They're saying that people who use tax-advantaged retirement funds are generally wealthier, so they don't need the deduction. But they're not like a billionaire. They're like the teacher and the small-time salesman for John Deere, you know? It's the neighborhood pharmacist. It's the neighborhood dentist. It's the accountant who does your taxes. You're not going after the big billionaire. Bezos, he's still on the yacht because he doesn't do the 401k. He's living on the yacht with his new wife. What are they doing? They're taking loans against their stock. Are they going against that? No. I don't think they should, because that was the deal he signed up for. That was the deal Elon signed up for. See, I don't like the government changing the rules midstream. And although you could critique the 401k, and there are a lot of people we've had on who do. And this is what Damon Jones, I like what Damon Jones says. As investments, tax advantage retirement plans are a really good deal. University of Chicago economist. The government doesn't tax income contributed on a traditional 401k or IRA. But it's not like you avoid taxes. You pay the tax on the higher amount when you withdraw the money in retirement. The tax breaks cost the federal government a little bit of money. I mean, $185 billion seems a lot to us. But in the government, to me, no one is calculating that if we didn't have the 401k, how many people would be broke. I think a lot more people would be struggling. Yet millions of Americans don't take advantage of tax-saving retirement savings plans or can't. Nearly half of workers have no access to a retirement plan at work, according to one AARP analysis. So who's right? AARP? Damon Jones? I would argue Damon Jones of Chicago is right. And here's the point. We could do a whole episode on the warts of a 401k. But you know what? I've met more millionaires by two reasons, maybe three. One, they started a business. Number two, they own a lot of real estate. Or number three, they save a lot in their 401k. That's how the average person has that mythic $1 million in their retirement account. And you know what's the beauty of that? If you're 25, if you're 35, put $300 a month in one of these plans, and it does blossom eventually. It does create a nice harvest. But that's if the government doesn't change the rules. So my friends, be wary of public politics. Politics comes from the Latin poly, meaning many, ticks, blood-sucking animals. So you got to be careful, my friends. And stand up for the 401k. Recently on, I don't know, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, people badmouth the 401k. I get the warts. But you know what's not a wart? Saving 10 to 15% of your pay. I'm Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback. I approve of this message. Welcome back to Extra Points, where we tackle your financial questions, dive into current money matters, or explore what's buzzing in the financial world, all based on what you, our listeners, are curious about. Josh, what do we have today?
Cereal prices have gone up 20% since January of 2020. And now Kellogg's new advertising is, hey, cereal for dinner.
Cereal for dinner? What about potato chips and stuff?
That's so now they're under some crazy fires. So a new article came out from Kellogg's. I don't know if you're aware about cereal lately, but cereal prices have skyrocketed. Cereal prices alone increased 20% since January of 2020. I don't know if you've been into a grocery store, but a box of cereal is like $8, $9.
But who buys cereal?
What, kids? I mean, kids don't buy it, but parents buy it for kids.
I don't
like
cereal because it's like, what do they feed cows?
Good.
To make them fat, you know, like corn.
Yeah.
Wheat.
Well, this all goes back to the point where the CEO of Kellogg's is under fire because they started a new advertising push saying cereal for dinner. Cereal can be a substitution for dinner, which obviously is not a substitution.
I actually have a theory of why they're hurting. You have the rise of the carnivore people on Instagram and all over social media. I'd rather eat steak and eggs than cereal, and it's healthier.
I don't know. I mean, our generation, you know, the millennial generation, all we got was cereal ads. You know, we had all the mascots. I don't know. I don't see cereal commercials anymore.
So, yeah, what did the kids have? You know what's a cool cereal that I thought was healthy? What's that, like, they do all the junky food cereals, but they do it healthier?
Oh, Magic Spoon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you tried Magic Spoon?
I think it's pretty good, right?
If you made a cereal, what kind of cereal would it be?
Coffee and stevia.
Yeah.
Yeah, coffee and cream. So this would be my brand. So let's trademark this. We will vigorously protect our intellectual property, Financial Quarterback Bites. I could do a really good tasting, healthy cereal. Here's the thing. The reason why I don't buy cereal is, you ever see the meme or the Twitter thing where it shows you like Quaker Oats strawberry flavor in the US versus like the UK? In the UK, it has like 4 ingredients. In the US, it has like 80 ingredients.
Yeah.
I think the key is they need to have less ingredients, less preservatives, less even grains, and just more healthy stuff. If I could pick cereal, I would be good at it. I'd have like maple bacon, you know, that would taste like pancakes and bacon and butter and syrup. Mmm. Like a maple bacon donut. You ever have those? And they're good. One would be called Heart Attack in a Bowl. I'm telling you, I'm a good flavor profile person.
I feel you on that.
I'd have birthday cake. I'd have Death by Chocolate.
Are you a super taster?
Yeah, I have a pretty good palate.
Yeah.
I would do like a blueberry muffin one. But I think the key with cereal is to have real food. But it's tough because it's not real food. Does anyone?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah.
Who here eats cereal? Jim on a whim?
No.
I like real food. The only guilty pleasure I have when it comes to food, like that I enjoy eating, like I'll eat like a chocolate chip cookie or something. Cereal, is that the new inflation? Do we really have low inflation? The Fed just announced that inflation has cooled. Has anybody really seen it cool? So inflation remains sticky in Europe with core prices cooling less than expected. Eurozone inflation cools less than expected to 2.6% in February. Stocks are drifting higher as the Fed's preferred inflation gauge hits a new low. Why do we trust the Fed to tell us inflation? Here's the thing, though, and this is where we have to sometimes distinguish the economy from the stock market to what we are all seeing. What if the number is cooling, but it's still high? I always talk about with inflation, the van that we bought for the business, 40 grand. Today, those vans go for 60 or 80 grand. Can you believe that? Big church van. They're not going back down again. But they're not increasing anymore. So they're saying inflation is not increasing, but it's still high and people can't afford it. So this is what they say. Personal consumption expenditures year over year grew 2.4%. That's PCE. Down from 2.9% the prior month. I would agree with that. But it's not like it's going down dramatically. So people just feel that inflation's upon us. People aren't buying cereal anymore because there are so many other choices. My financial tip is don't eat it. Hey there, listeners. Are you up against a financial obstacle or have a burning money question? Here's your shot to not get sacked. Get your questions answered live on the Financial Quarterback Podcast. Just dial 888-988-JOSH and leave us a message with your question or write us an email at info@financialquarterback.us. I might just answer your question live on the air. That's 888-988-5674, 888-988-JOSH, or email us info@financialquarterback.us. Leave us a message and let me help create your game-winning financial plan.
The previous presentation by Wealth Quarterback LLC, WQL, was intended for general information purposes only. No portion of the presentation serves as the receipt of or as a substitute for personalized investment advice from WQL or any other investment professional of your choosing. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and it should not be assumed that the future performance of any specific investment or investment strategy or any non-investment related or planning services, discussion, or content will be profitable, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. WQL is neither a law firm nor accounting firm, and no portion of its services should be construed as legal or accounting advice. No portion of the video content should be construed by a client or prospective client as a guarantee that he or she will experience a certain level of results if WQL is engaged or continues to be engaged to provide investment advisory services. A copy of WQL's current written disclosure brochure discussing our advisory services and fees is available upon request or at www.jalinski.org.